Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Right Stream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Right Stream and hashtag Right Stream. Thanks for listening to the Right Stream Radio Network.
Hello, everyone. Happy Sunday. This is Lisa Tarvest. I'm the host of the radio show you're listening to right now called Just Believe. And I wanted to take a few minutes just to talk about the show. I recently moved from 1 p.m. on Sundays to 7 p.m. And I'm hoping that's working better for people live-wise. You know, you can always go in and listen to the archives on Right Stream Radio Network, but we also want to be able to get as much of a live audience as we can, especially when I'm doing shows like, you know, that require some interaction with the audience live, which would be like the psychic readings and things we do once in a while. So anyway, again, my name is Lisa Tarvis, and I'm a metaphysician, board-certified holistic health practitioner, intuitive counselor, the author of the book called Just Believe, and recently became the director of marketing for the Right Stream Network, which is this wonderful radio station that we're listening to, that you're all listening to right now. A little bit about the Right Stream Radio Network. First of all, if you want to learn more about what we do, you can go to rightstreamradio.com. That's WRITESTREAM and then radio, RADIO. Well, you know, radio. So rightstreamradio.com. And you can learn all about all the shows that we have on Right Stream right now. We've got some really great shows that we're airing starting the week. If you start your week on Sunday, which I think technically we do, but some people don't think of it like that. But Just Believe is on every Sunday at 7. We have Military Monday with John D. Gresham on Mondays, Right Stream Tuesdays on Tuesday, Family Power Hour on Wednesdays, and now, starting this Friday, we're going to have a new show on called Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss. And your host for that show will be myself, along with Daria DiGiovanni, who is the host of Right Stream Tuesday, and Kristen Fetterman, who is a college student, and we're doing, and also my daughter, by the way. What we're going to be doing with the show is we're going to really be trying to focus on a lot of topics that are important to women. It's going to be, we're making it just a fun night out with the girls kind of thing, only, you know, you don't really go out necessarily, unless you're getting some girlfriends together to listen to the show. But we're going to be doing all kinds of different things, talking about careers, career issues and relationships and you know, parenting and skincare and fashion and you name it, we're going to be covering it on Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss, which we're actually calling LLL if you're hashtagging it on Twitter under hashtag LLL. So we have now we have the five shows a week on the Right Stream Network, and we're really excited about introducing the fifth, which is Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss. So check out all the different shows on the Right Stream Network at www.rightstreamradio.com, and you'll be able to look up anything about any of our shows, any of our hosts, which includes. Our hosts include Sheena Benjamin-Wise, Daria DiGiovanni, Dr. Billy Eisenberg, Kristen Fetterman, Don D. Gresham, and myself, Lisa Tarvis. So definitely check out that website. Not to mention my website, which is www.lisatarvis.com. And you can learn more about what I do
as a metaphysician and as a holistic health practitioner and as a psychic and intuitive. You know, not to mention all the different things that are going on with the network and with me and different things I'm doing. You can find, if you follow on my website, if you go to my website, you'll be able to find links to follow me on Twitter, on Facebook, on LinkedIn, whatever social network you're using. I'm on it, and you can certainly look me up through that. And when you do that, if you follow me on Twitter or Facebook, you're going to get posts about, you know, all the different things that each of us has going on at the Right Stream Network. Not to mention, with me and what I'm doing. Just Believe, the show is basically a show covering spiritual topics like holistic health, metaphysics, different things under the umbrella of metaphysics, the paranormal, lots of different things under the spiritual umbrella or the metaphysical umbrella, which is a big umbrella. So we want to, you know, I try to get a little bit of a mix on everything going on with the show. Tonight, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be talking about talking to an author of a book called Reflections on the Ring, and that's again Reflections on the Ring, and it's the author is Lori Colombo Dunham, and she's going to be calling in just a little bit, and we're going to talk to her about her new book, which I think just came out. I'm pretty sure last week, maybe even Friday. I'm not positive. But anyway, if you are an expert in a field of holistic health or metaphysics or spirituality, or if you're a psychic or a medium or anything that you feel would be a good fit for Just Believe Radio, please feel free to send me an email. My email address is lisa@lisatarvis.com. That's lisa@lisatarves.com. And I'll definitely review it and get back to you and let you know, when I can get you in. I'm currently scheduling for Just Believe in February and March. However, you know, adding to Just Believe now, I'm doing the scheduling for Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss. So if you're someone who is an expert on a women's issues topic, also use that same email address, lisa@lisatarvis.com, and shoot me an email and let me take a look at what you're doing. We are going to be, you know, we're looking at promoting businesses and, you know, whether you're local or you're an internet business or anything. Talking about any kind of different issues on LLL, Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss, besides obviously the angle that we use for Just Believe, which is spirituality. So anyway, I'm mumbling and going on, but I just wanted to make sure I welcomed everybody to the new time slot. This is, I think, the third week that we've done it, that I've been doing the show at 7, and it does seem to be a little easier for people to have a little bit of time, 7 o'clock on Sundays rather than 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So hopefully that's working for you. If you have any questions for me or my guests during the show, please feel free to call in at 347-945-7246. Again, that's 347-945-7246. When you call that number, you can actually just listen to the show from that number. So if you need to be running errands or need to be Christmas shopping, oh my gosh, I know we're doing that already. Whatever you need to be maybe doing, you can listen from your headset or whatever on your phone and drown out a little bit of that Christmas music if that's driving you crazy already, like it is a lot of people. But if you want to ask a question or you want to be on the show, you can just then dial that number and press 1 when you get to the show, and 1 will get you in the queue and I'll see you. So I'll be sure to bring you on and see and get any questions you have answered either for myself or for my guests. Also, the chat room's open. So when you go to the show's page, which is blogtalkradio.com/rightstream, you will scroll down to the bottom and you'll be able to see the chat room, which I'm going to, which I have open actually. I remembered to open it for once. So that's another one of those things I forget to do a lot. But anyway, I'm going to take a short break here and then I'm going to come back on and introduce my guest. Lori Colombo Dunham, and talk to her about her book, Reflections on the Ring, which is available at lulu.com, L-U-L-U.com. And, but for now, if you can all just hang in there, and I'm going to take a short commercial break, and we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Jennifer Coolidge. The American Heart Association says the disco song Stayin' Alive is the near-perfect beat for hands-only CPR. If you see a teen or adult collapse from cardiac arrest, you only need two steps to help save a life. Call 911 and push hard and fast in the center of the chest to the beat of the song Stayin' Alive. Disco is back and it's saving lives. To learn more, go to heart.org/hands-only-CPR.
Nationally supported by the WellPoint Foundation.
Monday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern on the Right Stream Radio Network. Tune in to Military Monday with host John D. Gresham, author, military historian, and journalist. John delves into a unique aspect of U.S. military history, as well as current events and issues affecting our men and women in uniform. Featuring exceptional guests, military experts, and authors, Military Monday with John D. Gresham entertains, informs, and encourages listeners to support those who put it all on the line for freedom. Military Monday with John D. Gresham, Monday afternoons at 1 o'clock Eastern on the Right Stream Radio Network.
Remember Humpty Dumpty and his great fall? Is it possible that we all have a lot in common with him? Could he have removed his propensity to go splat? Is there anything we can do to remove our own fault lines? Stephen Lewis, the developer of a 24/7 self-healing technology, the AIM program of energetic balancing, believes that in the absence of fault lines, Humpty would have just gotten banged up, a little dirty, requiring a little detailing rather than be put back together. Instead, he broke where he was programmed to age. But unlike Humpty, we can heal our fault lines, remove our potentials for disease instead of counting on others to diagnose or treat our symptoms. How? Visit aimprogram.com. Get Stephen's book, Sanctuary, The Path to Consciousness, and join the thousands worldwide who are changing their programming and becoming the first in the history of their family with no family history.
You're listening to the Right Stream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @RightStream and #RightStream. Thanks for listening to the Right Stream Radio Network.
We are back. Thank you all for holding in there and listening to our sponsor ads. By the way, anybody who's interested in becoming a sponsor on the Right Stream Network, please feel free to contact me. You can do that through email, lisa@lisatarvis.com, like all the other ways all the other things I gave you my email address for. It all gets directly to me. So if you're interested in being a sponsor, just give me a call, and we have some great opportunities for people that want to do that. So anyway, I want to get to my guest tonight, who is Lori Colombo Dunham. And I actually am real interested in this in this guest because she actually just released her book called Reflections on the Ring. And it's, well, I'm going to read her bio. It's really, the subtitle to it I believe, is An Ordinary Woman's Extraordinary Tale of How She Saved Her Marriage and Family. So this is going to be a really, I think, interesting story. Not only her book, but you know her personal story and her and her interview here for not only Just Believe but for Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss too. So we'll have to definitely talk to her about coming on that show one of these days as well. But Lori Columba Dunham is a happy wife and mother to husband Dave and their beautiful daughters Gianna and Bianca. She was raised in a traditional old school with traditional old school values. She's a Michigan native and spent most of her career in the geriatric field before meeting the man who would change her life forever in 2001. That was five years after she moved to the Sunshine State. Her first book is called Reflections on the Ring, An Ordinary Woman's Tale, Extraordinary Tale, How She Saved Her Marriage and Family, and it chronicles her journey from an unplanned pregnancy to a shotgun wedding and an enduring love story, which I think is really, really awesome. She lives in, Lori lives in Florida, obviously, the Palm Beach Gardens area of Florida, and she has her husband, her children, and her puppy dogs, which of course are very important to all of us. So I want to not waste any more time and bring Lori on the show. Lori, are you with me?
I am. Yes, Lisa.
Hi. Great to talk to you. I appreciate your being on the show. I know that this book, you've been working on this for how long?
It's actually been playing out in my mind for many years, but I actually started writing it about 2 years ago and took a little break. I couldn't have the finishing. I was missing something. And then after a year later, in the book, it talks about our goals, and Gianna had sent something, and that's what gave me closure to the book, and I was able to finish it.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I think that's so true with everyone who is an author who, you know, when you write a book, I know the same thing happened with me. You have it planned in your head for this really long period of time, and you're like, you know what it's going to be about. And then for some reason you start writing and you kind of like all of a sudden just go, everything kind of just shuts down. You're like, all right, where do I take it? How do I want to finish it? Yeah.
Exactly.
And
it was growing. You knew how it all was coming together. And then all of a sudden it just stops. And
exactly.
Now you just got to wait it out.
That period of time can be really frustrating for people who are authors because we're sitting there and we know this is an open-ended project, and especially when you're somebody who likes to get things done, you know, and check the boxes off. When that's sitting there, you know, undone, it can be really, really frustrating for someone to know that it's still something that they want to finish. But tell me, let's go back to why you wrote the book in the first place. Why did you decide to write Reflections on the Ring?
First, for me, it was a personal cleansing. So it was supposed to be very personal, just my journey, my journal writing, and then to deal with, mostly with my guilt. Then I was starting to write more on how I felt and that I had a story here that might be able to help a marriage or so. And then I was motivated to actually have a layout, and I wanted it to be entertaining, resourceful, and spiritual combined into what I was writing. Again, why it always came back to just that, the initial personal cleansing for me.
Right. And you know what, and a lot of people, I do hear that a lot too, people saying that they, you know, a lot of times it's therapeutic for them to write their story. And I think that sounds like what it was for you. In your bio, I read that you had, you know, traditions within a family and you were raised with traditional values and things like that. Tell me about both those. First of all, how were you raised with traditional value, and then to get to your traditions within your family, kind of two separate things, but kind of using the same word. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. You know, first, when I see adults, they light up when they're either experiencing a past tradition or speaking of a past tradition when they were young. With my own children and the traditions that they have, they expect, and if we try to deviate from what we have been doing, they kind of scold us. I believe it's one of the foundation and building blocks that we as children need. So when we grow up, there's a little nostalgia and a happy place that we can go to. For us, we didn't travel. My father was an entrepreneur, so he always worked. But our traditions were, you know, the Christmas Eve dinners, the Sunday dinners with over at the aunt and uncle's house, over at our house, the barbecues right. in the backyard, the 4th of July. I mean, they were simple traditions, but I can recall them today, you know, every time we went to, you know, my Uncle Tony's house on the farm, you know, being out in the barn or the magic chokes or the simple accordions that my cousins were playing. I mean, that, I see a accordion, I just, you know, become that child again because that was our tradition in our family.
Right. Right. I think we all have those things. You know, I remember, you know, coming up on, now that we're coming up on the holidays and everything, going to my aunt and uncle's house with my cousins and us having the kids table, you know, where all the kids, all the
right,
kids got
the kids table. No question.
Yeah.
And I mean, and you never realize it. I mean, as a child, you know, having dinner, whether it's at a restaurant or at your home, you're there, you're talking to the adults. I mean, that's how it is or that's how it was. Where today, you really don't have that interaction. So it's just little things how we're losing our traditions just through different the past and the present.
Well, you know, and that sometimes I think that we lose our traditions sometimes just because our lives change so much as we get older. You know, things happen, people move, and, you know, and people pass away. And so we have, you know, we have to continually revamp or make new traditions. Do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I moved away from my family in Michigan. I mean, my husband and I have, we have his mother that lives an hour from us. So we don't have those Sunday dinners with families. But we
right.
have our own little traditions within our house. So, you know, yes, you definitely replace them. But, I mean, we go camping with the cousins every year. We've done that, you know, my whole life. My children have been doing it their entire life. You know, my daughter wrote an essay, her favorite place on earth, Camp Dearborn. You know, you're sleeping in a tent for a week. I mean, it just, you can't beat it.
Right. Right. And that's so cool to have. I mean, my kids are older now. They're, you know, well, the oldest one is 20. I have a 19-year-old and a 15-year-old, and, you know, it's so funny to think back on how things have changed over the years and to think back on some of the things that, you know, they remember now, you know, talking to them as when they're older, and they remember things that, to me, didn't seem like huge special moments, but they really were, you know, in their minds. And then we think back, and, you know, I'll have a conversation with my dad, like now, I'll be like, I remember this or that, and I'll be like, really? You know? He's like, that
oh, it's the little thing.
Like,
exactly.
Yeah.
Like when we go camping, I mean, it's the smallest little things that my children bring to our attention that is so important to them. You know, crawfishing, you know, at midnight, the bonfires, the canteen. I mean, just, you know, the walk from the campsite to the state park, you know, 3 miles away, down the river. I mean, just they know what to expect and they enjoy it and it's going to be there for them. And like I said, it goes back to their happy place. I mean, it's security
right.
and comfort.
Yeah. Yeah. And that happy place that I like always try to find when I'm going to bed at night, you know, when you're trying to sleep and you're trying to shut the day off. And I sit there and I'm like, okay, going to my happy place now.
Oh, yes.
I love that happy place. You know, that subject we were just talking about kind of leaves me with the, you know, this way that since we were kids, since I was a kid, since even my children were really little, how the values and morals have changed in society. And I know you talk about that a little bit in your book. Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. Values and morals. You know, if you notice, my book was rated G. I mean, today it seems every television show has a sexual pun innuendo. I mean, I was just having a conversation with a couple of women today. The movies, television, music, that industry has hijacked our family's value system. A few years back, I heard the CEO of MTV say they control the influences of our children, and it disturbed me because he is right. I mean, as I see our society change drastically over the past few decades, I am concerned where we'll be in the next 20 years. I mean, my book brings us back to a time when people accepted personal responsibilities, our verbal commitment, and a handshake was all that was really needed. You know, most importantly, it was a time when people respected one another is when we grew up. I had mentioned that my father was an entrepreneur, and, you know, there was no long contracts and lawyers involved. I mean, a man's word was his word. You know, you tell that to your children. You know, you do good to others. You take care of your neighbor. And, I just feel like the whole industry with the Hollywood and the music industry, I just, you know, that really disturbs me in a great deal.
Yeah, I agree. It has really changed. And, you know, I remember being a teenager and being embarrassed to be sitting in the same room with my parents when there were certain things on TV and there were certain, even videos, like watching MTV and stuff like that. You know, a video would come on, I'd be like, oh, my God, I can't believe my dad's watching this with me. And and that was nothing compared to what it's like today.
Right. I mean, if you say, you know, if you look at 1950 when Lucy and, oh, I love Lucy, what's his name? You know, I mean, 1950, a married couple kept one foot on the floor when they were in a bed.
Right.
See, it was, I mean, if they kissed, it was closed mouth. I mean, it's today, anything and everything goes. I mean, it's always at shock value. And then that kind of like breaks down what we accept or you know, it just loosens our...
Well, and then I think it also leads to then we're wondering why our kids are the way they are, why they're dressing the way they're dressing, and growing up so fast, and you know, and getting into serious relationships, sexual relationships so much earlier, you know, than we certainly did, and I'm sure our parents, you know, way faster than our parents did. Talk to me. I know you talk about your grandparents in this book. I think specifically your grandmother. You had a name for her? What was it, Nona or something?
Oh, Nana, right? Italian
Nana,
for grandmother.
Nana.
Yes.
Okay. So, you talk in the book about her making a big impact on you. What can you share with us about that and the role that you think grandparents have in general?
Wow. You know, you said I majored in gerontology, and I found that career through my grandmother and her friends. You know, the elderly, the Japanese culture does it right. They have so much respect and honor for their elderly citizens. I do not care how old you are. Even if you're a 10-year-old child, you can look at a 6-year-old and say, boy, you don't understand anything. Just wait. You know, the elderly are gems. I mean, sometimes the diamonds that are never cleaned up. They have so much wisdom, life experience. People neglect to see or accept it. When I was working in a nursing home or in the nursing home industry, we would have an intergenerational program, which was sweet. I mean, we'd have the little toddlers come in, and they would interact with the residents and so forth. But I think what we really need is young adults and adults to – they need to be able to sit with the elderly. I mean, take away all that wealth of information that they have. Grandparents, they can share stories of their parents when they were young, teach us history from what they lived through. I mean, it's endless of what the elderly can teach and share with us, and so many people just, they don't see it. I mean, it's just, they see maybe the burden that they have opposed to the gem that they are. I don't know.
Right.
I mean, especially now, as I see it for the first time, our younger children, they're no longer having the interactions with the technology that's come into play. I mean, you're at a restaurant and you see the kids, they've got their little handheld device, and I just want to scream. And the adults are having conversation, and the kids are having their handheld device. We went to dinner the other night with my husband's uncle, and my kid's like, I'm so bored. It's like, you're supposed to be bored. Join us in the conversation. I mean, and that's where we're going to be engaged in and learn from.
Yeah, I think so too, and I think that, you know, I'm like what you're saying about your grandparents and stuff. Wow, I mean, they have so much to teach us,
so much we can learn from them. And I have a grandmother who's actually still alive. My mom's passed on, and my grandmother on my dad's side is still alive. She's 99. I mean, she can talk about things that, you know, just blow your mind. You know, she's been through so much. And it's amazing that, you know, she still remembers all these different things and the way she raised her family and her now witnessing the way her grandchildren, you know what I mean? I mean, it's amazing for her to see the different stages and the different generations that have gone by and how things have changed. I mean, you know, I'm her granddaughter and she's watching her great-grandchildren be raised by her granddaughter, and then her great-grandchildren are having children, you know, and it's just mind-boggling.
That's amazing.
Really.
When I was in school for gerontology, one of our projects was we had to do a life video of someone, and you have all these questions about their life, and you videotape that questionnaire, that interview with them. And I chose my dad at that time, and it's been incredible because now my dad has been deceased for about 15 years, and I have it for my children, and I encourage people to take the time to interview the elderly people in your life and just find out the stories that you never heard before by just some great questions that you can come up with.
Right. I actually did with my grandmother. I had my great-great-grandmother, my grandmother's grandmother. I don't know how many greats that is. But my grandmother's grandmother actually was the one who I know was that started the whole psychicness in my family. She was the first one that we know of that was truly gifted psychically. And because years ago, not knowing how long my grandmother would live, my grandmother had the world's greatest, and she still does. She remembers, she doesn't remember what she had for dinner, but she remembers everything about 30 years ago and her childhood and, you know, things of that sort. So I had her, I know, write it all down for me, you know, all the gifts the stories she remembered and all of that, because, you know, I didn't, little did I know, she'd been, you know, pushing on 100th door, but...
Wow.
You know, at the time, I didn't really know what would happen and how long she was going to be around. And I loved having that written down. I still go back to that letter, even though I can still call her and talk to her about it. I still go back to that letter sometimes and just read it and think, wow, this is a great piece of history that I'm holding in my hand. And I think that's what comes from, too, a lot from writing your story like you did, writing your book. You've now left your mark, you know. You've left your story out there, and I really want to talk about that story, and I'd love you to explain to people, you know, what is your book really about? I know that you talk about teenage pregnancy and you know your different things you've gone through with your husband. What are you covering in this book that's going to be able to help other people?
You know, first, I would hope that they take away with some strategies and improve their life, whether it's goal writing, praying for their spouse, increasing their faith, seeking out help if they need it in their lives. Or just a good laugh, thinking, wow, you know, glad that wasn't me. But mostly, I want them to take away with this and maybe share it with a friend in need. It's, you know, it gives you a little bit of a small how-to with some spirituality there with it.
Right.
The books that I used, I mean, they're very helpful for me. It's a catch-all. That's kind of how I was hoping to put it together.
And you write some pretty personal stuff, you know, in the book, and some stuff that, you know, you get into about your marriage and things like that. How did your husband, was he supportive of your writing the book when he read it? You know, what was his reaction? I would think when you're writing something so personal, like about your marriage, it would be something where obviously you'd be very concerned how he was going to handle it.
Ooh, I didn't tell him until the book was complete and we were ready for print. You know, for so many reasons. I needed no interruptions, nor did I want his side of the story.
Right.
Maybe I didn't want him to be discouraged or discourage me because he starts off as a not a quite shining armor. However, once I gave Dave the manuscript, he wanted to share it with everyone, so I was relieved. You know, once he read the book, he kept saying, you know, boy, was I a loser then, you know, when you first met me. So sometimes when the mirror is held up for the first time, things aren't so pretty, but he is so proud now of what he accomplished. You know, we love to reminisce of the past, which is good for him. I mean, I think that's definitely brings him full circle, and he can see himself, you know, what he has accomplished. So as of today, he's very proud.
Well, that's good. That's great. And that's what, you know, and that's obviously what the reaction that you would want from him, because that's, you know, we all want that. But it does get a little hinky when you're writing a book and you're bringing up the personal relationships in your life, and you're trying to be very honest with the audience, and at the same time not be hurtful, you know, towards people that are involved. You know, I've always thought about writing, you know, more detail. When I wrote my book, I wanted to get more detail, but I'm like, God, I'd have to have so many people sign off so they didn't sue me. You know, it would be crazy. But when it's a personal story, I guess, between you and your husband, I mean, worst thing he could have done was say, don't you dare publish that. I'll die, you know, or something. I'll be devastated.
Yeah, he definitely, you know, was very supportive. So I was happy about that. You know, and he told me in the beginning of our marriage, like, you know, was married, said, rule number one, we never discredit one another. In front of people or behind, we, you know, we always support one another. So that was a rule that we always kind of kept.
Yeah, I think that's really, really nice. And it's also important that when you're having children and things, that you make sure that you're having, I guess, that, you know, you're keeping your relationship a priority. You know, it's very easy to get lost in being a mom and being a parent and all of that. And you can very easily lose that connection that the two of you have, the two of you had and of having. And it sounds like for you, you know, it wasn't all, you know, perfect and happy in the beginning. So you, as you were having your children, I guess your relationship was really growing and changing. Do you think that it was growing and changing? Was it all positive changes? I've been married. I was married once before this marriage that, you know, to my husband now. And I just think back, that's where, you know, two of my kids are from that marriage. And I think back of all the pain and the heartache and the, you know, the kids were so young. You know, and I don't know exactly what my real question is here, except that, do you feel that through the relationship, do you feel like you lost anything, or do you feel like you really just gained because your relationship ended up being so much better?
Oh, definitely. I mean, we didn't have much to start with, so I think we could only have grown or crashed and burned. And I think that,
right.
I mean, that was the whole objective here. I mean, and I chose to make sure we didn't crash and burn. It could have been very ugly. There's no question. I mean, and we're not perfect. Obviously, you know, we have disagreements. And you know, being the hot Italian, you know, if I blow up, my husband doesn't yell. So it's me. And, you know, when I start yelling, you know, the kids start to panic. And I see the anguish in their eyes. So I you know, everything just has to stay calm. Because a calm house is definitely, you know, peaceful for everybody. But our relationship is growing, you know, between all the stress and the strain. When he put his foot down, you know, and saying we only put each other up, we never criticized one another, that made a significant difference, no question, because you always had to stay positive for the other person. And as
right.
we're struggling, you know, how do you do that when my hair is, you know, being pulled out?
Yeah. And talk to me a little bit, because one of the big things that you talk about in the book is teenage pregnancy and how it's so much more accepted today now than it used to be. Why do you think that is, and what are your thoughts on teenage pregnancy? I know it's a big part of what you write about, so You know, can you get can you give us some detail about that?
Sure.
Your feelings on.
Wow. Well, okay. First, I think Dr. Elders had it right. Do you remember her? She was President Clinton's general surgeon back
okay,
in the 80s.
Okay, yep.
Where
wow,
everyone
yeah, okay.
laughed at her or mocked her, but she was right. We need to teach abstinence. She was more graphic, but the bottom line was just no sex. However, on teenage pregnancies, I do not understand why the U.S. laws do not favor adoption parents. So many parents go overseas, they go abroad to adopt a child. If people could adopt with confidence in the U.S., maybe we could decrease abortions and increase U.S. adoptions for U.S. babies. Every family has a different dynamics, and I don't know, I don't think, you know, you can write a generic script for this one, but it goes back to why. Why are so many girls willing to have sex younger and younger? They're hungry for attention, and they need that self, they need that self-respect, really, to be able to say no. So when it comes to teenage pregnancies, you know, I'm all over the book. I mean, my first, my heart goes out to the girl on why is she having sex at such a young age. I mean,
right.
There's a problem there. I mean, the pregnancy is almost secondary. I mean, it's huge, obviously, because it's either abortion or you have now you have a teenage mother, and she's going
right.
to have to struggle now to get back on her feet. If the teenage pregnancies that I knew of, the parents came in and the grandparents are raising the children or assisting at least. So I just feel like we got to get to the girls sooner and teach them. You know, the no drugs, the no sex, and that whole package.
Right. I think that you're right. I think that, that that's important. But, you know, getting back to what we were talking about earlier with the way that, the, you know, that our values, the morals have just changed, and that our kids are growing up so much faster. You know, how do we do that? How do we teach them? I've raised three teenagers now. One I'm still in the midst of raising, but you know, the youngest being 15. I have a 19-year-old daughter and a 20-year-old son. And I got to tell you, it's, you know, I can sit here and talk, but what I say versus what their friends think and what their friends are doing is
mm-hmm.
so much
right.
less important in their mind. You know, I remember
yeah.
being a kid and being like, oh, my God, my mother would kill me if she knew I was doing this, so I didn't do it or I stopped doing
right.
it.
Right. Yeah, you had the
you
fear
know?
Of
I
your
mean,
parents.
Right.
I mean, there was no question. You had enough respect for your parents that you had fear from them. I mean, premarital pregnancy, I mean, accepted today. I mean, why? You know, oh, I have so many comments on this one.
I know.
And they're all important to me. I mean, first I would ask, what drives our society? And it goes back to the media, the movies, the news, the television, the music. Parents are an influence, but the media is so much stronger. And they know it. And they're winning, which scares me every day. Secondly, you have the politicians. They've legislated where personal matters and use that as an agenda. For example, passing out condoms or birth control bills, saying, go have sex, just don't get pregnant. But if you do, we have an answer for that, too. So there's always an answer. I mean, with the instant gratification that people are able to have in a sexual relationship, action is one of them. That is promoted. I mean, it's just an action and it's nothing more. Women are in a difficult place today. They have won all the women lib agendas, but have they really? I mean, look at where the women are today, our younger women, our girls. So I know they're the ones that I'm suffering, and I know I'm rambling.
This is so important, and this is, you know, one of the things that I really want to focus on with this is that, you know what, there are no easy answers with this. I mean, it's great to say abstinence is the way to go, obviously. I mean, and it's great to have that be your plan of attack, but it just doesn't work that easily
right.
all the time, you know.
But
and,
you know, Lisa, there's one more component here, okay,
right.
and the acceptance. I believe that comes from withdrawal from the church. Fewer people are attending religious services, and they are not needed to answer to the higher power. So the parents are away, the kids will play, you know, I mean, if that makes sense. I just go to church and I see fewer young boys there, young men, and or it's single women. I mean, I see a lot of absence of men and boys in the church. So I think that plays a role in it as well.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there's a lot of different aspects to it. In fact, the spiritual aspect to things, being that, you know, like I raised my kids as spiritual beings. They went to church. They were baptized. You know, we were Protestant Methodist, but, you know, they were baptized and they went to church and, you know, we did our things when they were really little. But for the most part, you know, by the time they were in middle school, I was doing my own thing on Sundays. I would have something we called spiritual hour, and I would teach them about all kinds of different religions. I would teach them about all kinds of different spiritual topics. And I did that so that they could choose their own path. I didn't want to shove one religion and say, okay, well, I'm Methodist, so you have to be Methodist. And,
right.
you know, and that be the only way. So how do we keep their, how do you feel like we keep their options open, give them still that free will to make their own choices, and at the same time pull them back, you know, pull in the reins? Or is it not possible?
Well, I think you're an example. I mean, I think you're a minority. I mean, I thought that was great on what you're doing with your children. My daughter's right now learning world religions, and I think it's phenomenal. She's learning on, but she has a foundation she can go back to. So have that foundation, your home base, learn, figure out what makes sense to you, what's comfortable with you. And then, you know, and you have that check and balance with what you were raised with. And you have to, I think as a parent, you're going to raise them what your beliefs are. And then once you introduce them what's out there, you know, hopefully what you did, they'll make the right choices. I mean, you're going from, I mean, if you're talking Christianity, there's various, but the bottom line is it's Christianity, so, you know, they don't veer off too far.
Right. I just think when I look back on my childhood, and I was, you know, not the world's greatest kid or anything, but I was pretty grounded, and I was pretty, very in touch. I mean, my parents didn't force us to go to church. We weren't, you know, religion wasn't a huge part of our life. We did go on special occasions. You know, we were the hypocritical, churchgoers that went on Easter and Christmas Eve and all of that. But, you know, I, as I got older, it was more of a choice. I don't feel like, you know, for me, I don't know. I don't know that it was like that, what you're saying about that whole background. That whole, like, it was my upbringing, but it really had very little to do about any religious practice that I had.
You know, and you're like my husband. My husband, he doesn't like any religion. He sees it as all just war and hypocrite. He's very spiritual, higher being, God, but not
right.
religious side. And I mean, but he's still teaching his children values. He's still teaching them the Ten Commandments just by his behavior and his actions.
Right.
It may not be this is what, you know, 1 through 10 says, but his behavior
right.
and his actions are speaking loud.
And that's the focus. I think that's the main thing. That's the glue that keeps it all together. It's not necessarily that you're teaching them verbatim what it says in the Bible or whatever your religious text happens to be, but instead, you're teaching them based on you and your life and your choices that you're making, the values that you have, the morals that you have. And I guess if, you know, as long as our morals stay on track, and that's the problem, is I just see this changing with generation after generation. I mean, you know, I raised my kids fairly close to how I was raised. Obviously, there was a little more lenience. I mean, you know, a generation later, in some with regard to some things. But you know, and if everybody just gives up a little bit of that and is a little more lenient with their generation, what's it going to be like 10 generations from now? You
right.
know,
then,
you know. So, are we doing it right? I mean, I don't know. I don't know. You know, I just think that, you know, you look at it like the way that you're taught, and then you want to turn it around and make it about what you have to adapt a little bit. Your parenting style has to adapt a little bit from the way, because life is different. Things are different than they were when we were going through the things our kids are going through now. And I think we do have to sort of adapt that and you know, adapt our ways of parenting, but in the same way, I mean, wow, what's the world going to be like if we keep doing that, you know?
Exactly. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, look at where we were from this, you know, 50, 60, 70. I mean, let's take each decade
right. And
where we're at.
Right.
And I don't know. I mean, maybe something will happen where, you know, the kids will wake up and they will make a difference. Maybe it will be the next generation. Don't know, you know.
Yeah. Well, what happened with you? I mean, I know that you got pregnant unexpectedly when you were with your husband for a short time. What was that like? How did you cope with that? How did your family cope with that? Based on, you know, how you were brought up.
not well. I had two territories, Michigan and Florida, so life was large for me. I couldn't get any better, and I had met Dave in Florida, and I was, I had just broken up, or I was had an engagement that was broken up like 10 minutes earlier, so I was, you know, very fragile. He was around, and I really was going to move back to Michigan, and so I really wasn't thinking anything of him. Well, my mother, obviously, had great concerns for him. I mean, she had some concerns about him. So nobody really thought about anything until I announced that we were getting, when I announced my pregnancy to my mom.
Yeah, that can't be an easy thing to do.
Well, it wasn't. Believe it or not, but for several years, my mom wanted me to, or she was trying to convince me to change the date of my marriage. We wed in November, and she wanted me to say that it was in June. So, and my siblings were just kind of, they were just all over the board. And I thought, well, you know, Gianna was 4 or 5 years old, and I finally ended up telling her, it's like, you know, you've got to speak the truth, always. You know, the truth always comes out. How am I going to explain this lie to her down the road? And that's when kind of like the guilt, I think, started really heavily weighing in on me. So, but my family, he's one of those persons where, you know, easily to be accepted by anyone. So it all worked out with my family.
Well, that's good, because I know that's got to be a very difficult thing. Thank God I have not experienced that either way. But, you know, with my children or with my parents, that, you know, I had to break that news to them. But that's got to be just, you know, not an easy conversation to have with your mom, and trying to change the date thing. God, that just sounds typical. That sounds like something my parents would have done or my grandparents would have done. You know what I mean?
I mean, like, I'm just shaking my head. It's like, what? It was the craziest thing, but you're right. I guess it was like the thing to do, you know. And I think, you know, as parents, we want to tell our children and get them to understand. Always come to us for the problem. You know, we're trying to teach you right from wrong. But if you do wrong, please still come to us. I mean, we'll get through this together.
Well, and I think that's what's so. I remember a conversation with my mom when I was a teenager, and I was shocked. My sister was like maybe 12. And she said, "So, Mom, what would you do if Lisa or I came home pregnant?" And I was like, "Oh my God!" I couldn't believe she said this, because you just did not have this conversation with my mother. You know, it was just she basically taught us you have sex when you get married, and that's it. You know,
right.
And that was just the way it was done. And you know, so I couldn't believe my sister said this, but it just actually points to my sister being crazy. Anyway, but. So I remember her saying that, and my mom looking down, and she, we were all standing in the kitchen, and I'm just like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, my mom's going to snap. And my mom said, you know what, I would be very disappointed, but I would understand, and we would deal with it. You know, and that's exactly what you just said, you know, is that okay, this is already here, this has already happened, there's no preaching I can do, no lecturing I can do to undo it. You know, it's already happened. And that's so much of what I teach with, you know, in my work with forgiveness, forgiving ourselves for mistakes, forgiving our, forgiving each other, you know, for the mistakes that we, you know, the ways we hurt each other, and letting those kind of things go. And I think that, you know, this was a lesson you probably learned very, very early on that, you know what, it happened. It is what it is. And now we've just got to deal with it. And your parents too. You know, they didn't see it coming, but, you know, they saw it happened. Did your parents, were they kind of pressuring you? Okay, well, you know, you're pregnant, you have to get married.
Oh, immediately. I mean, that was like the first sentence. When are you getting married? You know, and I said, well, we're going to get married. And her whole comment, like, he's 40 years old. He's not going to get married. Why would he want to marry you? Then, you know, and blah, blah, blah. She just starts rambling. So, yeah, you've got to get married immediately. That was the whole conversation.
Right. And I know that there's a story you tell in the book about your brother who was there, I guess, when you told your mom you were pregnant. Daria, of course, who has worked with you on this project, told me that it was a pretty funny scene that I should ask you about, so you could tell everyone. So I'm a little anxious.
You know, I still chuckle today. I mean, my brother, who is 6 years older than me, just an easygoing guy. He's there up on. He's in the couch. He's reading the newspaper, minding his business. And I already told him, and I had told my other brother as well. And they were the only two that knew. And I told him, you know, I want you to be, you have to be there when I tell mom. He's like, me? Why me? It's like, well, because you're the only one here. And I go, I'll let you know when it's time. And I go, Joey, it's time. He looks at me with, like, big eyes. He's like, what? Now? I go, yeah, now. And he was not moving. And I was like, are you kidding me? He's like, get up now into the kitchen. It was crazy. and he was more scared than me, which I think was the humor of it all. So it's like, okay, Joey, I got to take care of you, and you're supposed to be there supporting me. Okay. And so, I you know, we finally sat down in the kitchen, and my mom, you know, he's all nervous, and I think it was like the best way to – and his pain was for me to just blurt it out to my mom. I mean, yeah, he was hysterical.
He just kind of did it for you there, ripped that Band-Aid right off kind of.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I guess – I don't know. I don't want to say typical guy, but he, you know, not a lot of strength there.
Yeah. So you basically are in this fairly new relationship, and you're having a baby together, and you're marrying each other. So you're, you know, wow. You want to? I can't imagine the uncomfortableness that must have gone along with that in some ways, because you're still really learning about each other and. And you're both still changing because you've got these huge life things changing you. You know what I mean? You're having a baby, for God's sakes. I mean, that's a big deal. And you know, so when you look back on, you know, that relationship with your husband and how did those changes and all, you know, all of that adapting, you know, to being a parent and to being a wife, how did that affect you? And basically, I guess your deep foundation, your relationship with God, your relationship with your higher power, how did all of that link up? I mean, I know how stressful that time is, you know, when everything goes perfectly, you know, it's when, you know, when you get engaged, when you get married, and when you know, are planning and you had this idea, I'm sure, of the beautiful church wedding and all of that. And you didn't do that. I mean, you weren't able to do that. So, you know, do you feel like, did you start questioning why this stuff was happening? Did you start questioning if you had somehow, damaged your relationship with God, or you know what I mean? All the things that, because of the way you were brought up so traditionally, and to have it not exactly go that way later on.
Right. You know, I struggled through the years with just growing in, you know, the youngest of six. My father was manic depressant. He was never diagnosed till he was an elderly gentleman. So I had all that struggles growing up. And then, you know, I meet this man that I barely know, and now I'm all of a sudden married to him. And how am I going to make this work? I mean, I knew I always wanted to be married and have a family. There's no question about that. You know, every child, every little girl dreams of her, you know, beautiful princess wedding. Absolutely. I mean,
right.
I didn't have a strong relationship with God. I mean, I was floating in and out of church, you know. The prayers came and went. You know, I was just floating through life, you know, like everybody else that was just trying to make it. You know, once Dave and I were together and we were struggling, you know, honestly, it was my daughter's relationship. I mean, I wanted it to work, but our finances were just so grueling. But when I saw Dave and Gianna interact together, it was so incredibly beautiful. I mean, that relationship really kind of shook me up and said, how would I ever want to disappoint this child? I mean, to ever break up this unit that we had,
right.
Something had to be done. I mean, I had to figure out how to make this work. And so, you know, just soul searching from that point on. I mean, and then I just started figuring out, you know, what can I do and who is this man? And then I kind of like grabbed on John Gray's book, Mars and Venus, which was the number one seller back in the late 90s.
Love that book. I swear.
Well, you know, isn't it not great?
Memorized.
I mean, it makes so much sense. It's like, you know, I need to review back and try to relate to this person that I'm starting a family with. And then, you know, then it's like, okay, well, we've got marriage and we have motherhood. And so it's like, okay, well, I've got my mother, and she, Dr. Laura was big on the air at that time. And
Right. She
kind of echoed my mother, so I kind of wrapped around her. And then, you know, in time, a girlfriend of mine, she just handed me Stormy's book, A Power of a Praying Wife, for no reason. And just said, you know, here, this is a great book, not knowing anything in my life. And that's when I really started my spirituality and my prayers and coming into that realm of my life and embracing it for my family.
And you really feel like the praying and the spiritual side of your relationship with your with your husband and all of that, the relationship that you, okay, I'm gonna try and put this in real words here, that you when you're talking about how you started to become a more spiritual person, you started finding your way spiritually versus religion, you know, and all of that, or not versus, but even, you know, linking with, you talk about it basically helping to, I guess, pour the foundation of what became a successful marriage.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, whether you're in business and you have a relationship with your clients, your coworkers, your boss, or your spouse or your girlfriends, I mean, there's a foundation there, and you have to build on that. I mean, you have trust, you have respect for one another. I mean, and as your spouse. I was in sales and goal writing. I mean, you write out your goals. So, I mean, it was a package. I mean, you looked at, I wrote my goals out, but I had no more power. I mean, where am I going to go? What could I do? I mean, this, I was given everything that I had. I had nothing else to give. My family couldn't give me anymore or help me anymore. So where do you go? I mean, and that's kind of when I turned to the higher power, and I turned to God and said, you know, you want all our troubles? Take them. I don't want it. I'm done.
And
I do believe that's where, you know, I started seeing a change. I mean, I wasn't sitting on the couch. I mean, once you turn it over and once you act, you've got to be proactive. I mean, you've got to work towards it.
Right. Right, and there's a level of I always tell people, you know, when you truly are releasing your problems, you know, release your problems. But you know, if you're gonna give your issue or your pain or whatever to God or to your angels or whatever you're choosing to do, you need to then let them take some of the control over the situation and over the outcome. But what people don't understand is it's not just a washing, I think, of the hands as much as it is being led down the right paths. And like that book, like you're talking about Mars, John Gray's book, Mars and Venus, I think that helped so many relationships, so many marriages. I was single. I remember when that book came out. It was before I even met my first husband. I don't know. I know I had it. I kept giving it away and having to rebuy it because I was like, you've got to read this book. And then I'd end up having to buy it again. And I do that with a lot of books, actually. But I remember just so many different aspects of that book. And that kind of being, and for me, one of the ways that it led me out of my first marriage. So you can look at a book like this and be like, okay, this influenced you and the way it influenced you, and it helped save your marriage. Well, it helped me realize, you know what, there's nothing here. There's nothing to save here. Yeah. So how you can take the same book and see, you know, you can understand each other better. You can understand where you're each coming from and everything, but you can still use that same tool in a completely different way. And believe me, the end of my first marriage was something that was good for my children, good for me. It was the right thing to do in my situation, but you know, for completely different reasons. But it's just interesting to see how you can look at these things. But what other books? I mean, I know you talk about other books being huge, and I'm on your website actually right now looking at this, looking at your website, which to all the listeners, by the way, is reflectionsonthering.wordpress.com. And you credit, I know you credit Dr. Laura. We already talked about her, and of course, John Gray. Was there somebody? There's another book I think you mentioned in here. I'm trying to find
Stormy.
It. I know I ran across Storm.
It,
okay, right.
I'm not a detailed person. I'm ADD. I mean, for me to sit and read long technical books or anything, I mean, I'm very simple. And it just, I'm a very practical person. And it's just, I came to the conclusion, I have to make this happen. I want to make this work. I want to make it work. And I just took what was on my bookshelf and applied it. I mean, so that's kind of
it was already sitting there. It was already
I already
there.
Had it. Well, I already had John Gray, no question. I had that.
Yeah.
And I just pulled it out again. And then, like I said, you know, Dr. Laura, I listened to, you know, my mother listened to her, I listened to her, and it echoed my mother, and it echoed, you know, my beliefs, my personal beliefs. So I didn't even really read her books. I just, you know, knew. I mean, she followed my mother. It was really Stormy's book that really got me to take the prayers. She taught you how to pray, and she taught you how and what and the details in it. And I think that's where it made a difference. I mean, what I put in my purse, you write it down, you read it out, and I think that is where, you know, goal setting, prayer, however you want to label it. But that, I think, it makes a difference. I mean, in sales. I mean, it's documented. You know, 80% of your goals are achieved if you write them down and you look at them and you read them every day and you write them every day.
Yeah, there's so much, and goal setting I think is so important and so such a powerful, powerful tool that we can use. And I think you mentioned you guys came up with your own name for your goals or
we in the book we had the dumb goal sheet, but actually my husband went to a conference and they handed a book out to everybody. And it was the same layout, and my husband came home and said, we're doing this as a family. He goes, go make 4 books. And so I made the same layout as what's in my book, and we sit around, and most nights we fill them out. I mean, it's a 3-step process. You know, what are you great? 10 things that you're grateful for, 3 things that made you happy in the last 24 hours, and what are you earning? What's your goal? You know, whether it's short-term, long-term, you write it down. And I have to say, you know, what you're grateful for, that was pretty amazing to me because, you know, I mean, at the beginning, it was all very generic and all very superficial. But then you started noticing the flowers and the sunshine. I mean, the bigger things in life. So,
yeah.
You know, and then what made you happy in the last 24 hours?
Right. And how that can be, something completely different than what you're grateful for, what you're thankful for, and become something so different than what made you happy. I mean, the simplest little thing can come to mind that you're grateful for, you know, and then something can make you happy that is, you know, completely different. I like that. I like that concept of doing that. So where does the goal part come in?
I mean, it's the last, you know, what you're earning for, what your goal is. It's the last one. And, you know, I mean, everyone has their own. I mean, my daughters have their own personal goals, and my husband and I have our personal goals, and we read them to each other. When we do this as a family, and we write them out, and we read them out loud to each one another.
I love that. How old are your girls now?
They're 11 and 9. Yeah, they're 11 and 9.
Yeah, that's great. It's still a great age. It's you know, they're starting to become. It's amazing how you watch them at that age become like such little people. You know, they become their own little individuals.
Oh, the preteen, definitely.
Oh gosh, I know. Believe me, I remember. It's actually, you know what? I think probably 11 is was the hardest for me with my girls, and you know, it only gets better.
Yes. Well, this is the hardest, and that's good. I only have a few more months left.
For one, and then you've got another one.
Oh,
on
right.
It, but...
right.
I'm not going to get out
different
of it.
Different personalities.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's amazing. But what else do you want to tell us about the book and about, you know, about your story that we haven't already covered during our talk today?
Well, I mean, I want them to be able to read the book and see how it can affect their lives. I mean, to make it better. I mean, we talked about the goals. We talked about, you know, the details of your prayers. That's really what I would hope for somebody. I mean, there's so many financial hardships out there for married couples, and it's not easy. There's no question. And I just hope that people are able to know that, you know, Bianca's this famous quote, you know, all things are possible with God. I mean, it's just coming from her little voice. It's just so cute. And just to have that faith and turn it up over to
right.
them.
Right, right. That is so crucial and such a important message. You know, I haven't had the chance yet to read the entire book. I've just read some of the, you know, the gist of the book and things like that. But I'm looking really forward to reading it. And I understand that it can be purchased at lulu.com. Is that right?
Yes, lulu.com. Absolutely. You know, it's a quick, easy read. It's what I wanted. I like I said, I'm a simple person. I'm right to the point. We give it a little novel scenario, but all the facts and all the information that you can walk away with is there.
Yeah, and I think it's important. I mean, you can't get enough. You know, like you're saying. I mean, marriage is not easy. And there's so much divorce. I mean, you know, there's so much out there, and it's so nice to be able to have, you know, some actual live tools you can use to try and keep things together and to keep things in perspective. I mean, that's so important. Is like you're saying about your Dunham goal sheet is to be able to sit down and say, hey, I'm really grateful for this. This really makes me happier. This made me happy today, or whatever. And, you know, coming up on Thanksgiving, you know, we all do that whole around the table thing. I don't know if your family does, but my family does. Thanksgiving, you know, what are you grateful for? And you're looking at the big things. You know, you're looking back on a year, and you're looking back on the really big picture of your last year. And you're grateful for somebody surviving a serious illness, or you're grateful for, you know, finding a job if you didn't have one, you know, maybe you were out of work. These big things, but what we miss are those little every single day things that are there that we should be thankful for. And little things that your husband might do for you, or you might do for your husband, or the little gifts back and forth that you give to your children and your children give back to you, that we just overlook. We kind of just, you know, it just happens and it's cute for a second or it's sweet for a second and then we move on. And I think by writing it down, by doing this exercise that you're talking about in the book, I really think that you're then giving those little things so much more power, you know, over your everyday life, and that's so awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, and that was my goal. That was my personal goal for the readers, I should say, within the book.
Yeah, and I think that's a great goal. It's a great message, you know, to teach people, you know, that there's a lot of self-help books out there. There's a lot of stuff out there, but the things that you can walk away with, actual tools, something that you can take away and then turn around and use in your own life. You know, you've written one of those, not to mention, you know, you talk about the ones that impacted your life so much.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's amazing. You don't have to make things complicated. I mean, especially when your life is in a whirlwind and you really don't even have the energy to dissect something. I mean, you just need it in simple terms, lay it out, tell me what to do, give me a step-by-step instruction. I mean, how can I survive this?
I just love that, and you know what? I get it from my clients all the time. You know, they're coming to me, and they need guidance. They need some sort of opinion. You know, other than because they're too into their own issue, they're too inside of their own issue. So to be able to, you know, that's what they're looking for. They want me to just say, okay, go home and do this. You know. And then check that box and check this box and check, you know, do these three things and things will be better this week and we'll talk next week. I mean, things like that, it makes a big, that's what people want. They don't want me to sit there and say, well, you know, and go on for an hour about a story of all the things they could change. They know that these things can be changed, but they need action. You know, they need concrete actions that they can take to make a difference. And I love that you conquer that in this book, that you get to that point of giving people something, a takeaway, a tool that they can use then to improve all their relationships. And although this book is a lot about marriage and a lot about, you know, your marriage and all of that, it's also, you know, really about relationships with anyone. It doesn't just have to be a relationship with your husband or your wife or, you know, spouse, whatever. It can be with your children, you know, your relationship with your children. You're making it work, you know, you're using the tools with your children as well.
Absolutely. I mean, it goes back to, you know, we're all in relationships with everyone we have a connection with, you know, and how do you want to nurture that and how do you want to develop it? So, you know, once you realize what you want with this relationship, then you take the next step forward and you act on it.
Yeah, I like that, and I mean that's the bottom line, is that you have to really know what it is that know what it is you want and know what's best for you. And a lot of times that's through your intuitive sensing too. Like for me, intuitively with my first marriage, I knew this marriage was over; it had to end, or it was going to destroy me and my children. So for me, it was just knowing that I had, but doing the opposite of what, you know, your calling was for your marriage. Your calling was, hey, put my all into it. This can work. This will work. And for you, you know, that's what happened. But, you know, the whole thing is staying positive during it and during the whole process, whatever the process may be, and just looking at the idea of being so grateful for everything that you have, and even those, you know, with all the money issues that everybody has and all the problems that we have with, you know, raising kids and all of that, it's really great to be able to look at things and be grateful for the simple stuff, you know, the simple things out there and for the good. You know, it's really easy to focus on the bad, but it's not as always easy to focus on the good. So I love that message, and I'm really happy that you were able to share that with us today. Anybody who wants to take a look at more about Lori's story. Lori's story. Oh boy. I don't know why I had such a hard time saying that. You can visit her web page, which is reflectionsonthering.wordpress.com, right?
Correct. Yes. I didn't want to interrupt you. Yes. Reflectionsonthering.wordpress.com. Yes. And the book you can get at lulu.com.
Lulu.com. Yeah, I was just on the site. And there are, by the way, when you go to reflectionsonthering.wordpress.com, there's lots of different information. This is, I guess, your blog, right?
It is, yes.
You're updating, yeah. And there's lots of information there on the book. And, of course, there's a synopsis of the book, plus a link to where you can buy the book on lulu.com. So, everybody, I encourage you to definitely take a look at this book, and it's a real eye opener, and I like the easy reads. I'm like you. I like something that's very easy to read and gives me ideas and tools, and you know, and has a funny kind of story to it too. You know, nothing. I don't need anything. You know, I don't need to be reading War and Peace here. I just want a nice, simple little, you know, easy read. And you know, we're so busy, everybody's got so much going on, it's so great to be able to have just something enjoyable that you can, you know, read quickly and enjoy it and get something out of it and then move on with your life, you know.
Yeah, thank you so much. I've enjoyed this opportunity speaking with you, and you know, this was wonderful.
I really appreciate you being on the show, and I can't wait to read the book, the whole book. I know you, it just, when did you release it? Was it just Friday?
It was. Yeah, we were frantically trying to get together the book cover and everything. But, yes, it's Friday, so it's only been 2 days.
Yeah, that's great. That's awesome. I know it was real recent because I know I've been, you know, you've been on my schedule for a while, and I've been watching for it. So I'm really looking forward to finally getting a chance to read it.
You're so kind, Lisa. You're very kind, and I'm very grateful.
Thank you, and thank you so much, and good luck with your book. I think it's going to do really, really well. I think it's a great story, and I think people are going to get a lot out of it. And, you know, thanks for writing something that people can get some help from.
Well, please, it was my pleasure. And, again, this was a great opportunity to, you know, have your listeners hear what I had to say, what the book's about, and hopefully, you know, make a difference in their lives.
Oh, that's great. All right, thanks so much, Lori. It was great talking to you. And I'll keep up with how things are going with you over the next few weeks. Good luck with everything.
All right, sweetie. Thank you. You too, and have a happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks. Same to you.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, everyone. That was Lori Colombo Dunham, and her book, again, is called Reflections on the Ring. And I think that the subtitle is An Ordinary Woman's Extraordinary Tale and How She Saved Her Marriage and Family. So I think it's a really great, great read. And, you know, when you're talking about gratitude and being grateful for the things that, that we have, especially this time of year, and, you know, things get really crazy over the next, you know, 6 weeks or so. So everybody, you know, you want to think back on the things that you're grateful for and the things that you're happy about that are good in your life. Like I said earlier with Lori, it's really easy to focus on the negative and the bad stuff, but there's so much good, and we just have to remember that and see that and focus focus on that. So everyone, thank you so much for listening to this week's Just Believe. Next week we're going to be talking about, I'm pretty sure reincarnation is on the table next week. So that's going to be an interesting show as well. So everybody, please check out my website, lisatarvis.com. You'll find links to my Facebook pages, my Twitter account, LinkedIn, plus some links to where you can buy my book, Just Believe, and this also links to where you can listen to other episodes of Just Believe and on the Right Stream Network. So, and don't forget, this Friday starts Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss with me, Daria DiGiovanni, and Kristen Fetterman talking girl talk every Friday night, 7 p.m. So please tune in for that starting this Friday, Black Friday, at 7 p.m. We're going to make it a happy Black Friday with some girl talk. So we're going to have you grab a glass of wine or a cup of tea and sit down and talk with us. We're going to be having a really fun guest on, so watch for all the details about that. And we will talk to you on Friday, and then I'll talk to you again on Sunday at 7 for another episode of Just Believe. So thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.